Okay, thanks very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be here. I thought I'd put up here the best examples of pattern formation that I know of, human life. That's my son there on the left, the right. Okay, so it's really very good timing to talk directly after Bob, because the let's go back. Because this is sort of a perfect sort of platform on which to give the next talk, which is on coarsening dynamics of faceted crystal surfaces. What I'm going to present here are physically motivated models aimed at understanding morphologies of this type. So what you're looking at here is an experimental image of a faceted surface, microfaceted surface. What this one is exhibiting hexagonal symmetry. To look closely at that to see this. These structures tend to evolve in time, and the characteristic length scales of these pyramidal structures grow, and what we'd like to understand is the rate at which they grow and also something about the way in which they grow. Here's a fourfold symmetric surface faceting structure, and this is the one that we'll concentrate on throughout the talk. But all of the methods that I'll describe are relevant for square, trigonal, or hexagonal. And these are the three relevant symmetry groups for surface structures. The context for this study is the world of quantum dots. So I put this up. This is not exactly this is not the problem I'm going to discuss, but this is a context and it's fascinating, and I'd like to point this problem out to you if you're not yet aware of it. And that is, if you deposit germanium on top of a silicon substrate, so here's a silicon substrate and here's germanium which has been deposited, the attempt has been to uniformly deposit this material, but there's an instability associated with the elastic misfit which drives these structures to segregate, and they aggregate into microfaceted structures. And what I want you to note here is here's a small pyramid, and as they grow larger, they go into these multifaceted domes. This is the problem that's truly of interest and the one that I'm trying to get to. And this study of simple faceting and coarsening is an attempt to move towards this problem. These structures also undergo coarsening. So here, maybe zoom this image up. Here is an as-deposited array of quantum dots, which is annealed and left to its own devices. And at a later time, you'll notice the number density has gone down. This ripening or coarsening is an extremely important question if you want to use these things technologically. The open problem, which still remains, is whether or not this process terminates. And if it terminates, why? That coarsening aspect also is relevant without elasticity, and we'll be looking at that. Here's a picture of a single quantum dot. It's a high-resolution image. I want you to notice the scale here. This is nanometer scale. And I put this image up to sort of correct a certain misconception in modeling surface phenomena, faceting surface phenomena, which is you can have anisotropy, which selects preferred orientations, but it's not obvious, nor is it necessarily true, that when two facets meet, they meet at a sharp edge. So if you think of the Wolf construction, which is this idealized image of how a crystal facets, it doesn't attach any penalty to two facets coming together in a sharp edge. This image illustrates that there is an obstacle to forming a sharp edge, and we'll model that obstacle with an edge energy. So the physically motivated model that we'll look at is an anisotropic surface energy, which promotes faceting, but in addition we'll have a corner rounding energy, and that's motivated by this. I should mention, this is work by Jerry Tersoff at IBM, who uses exactly the same energy that I'm about to get to. Okay, so in order to try and get to an equation, we're going to study the 2D problem, but I'll first describe a sort of generic schematic 1D version. So what you want to think of, this is sort of the generic picture, is we're going to be looking at a faceted crystal surface. There's going to be a corner rounding effect coming from a corner energy of some given length scale alpha. This crystalline surface, this is the crystal, will be in contact with a melt, and there may or may not be a net growth into the melt. So there's going to be two regimes, one in which the chemical potential of the melt and the solid coincide, in which case the surface undergoes reconstruction but without net growth, and the second regime, the one of interest, where net growth occurs because there's a bulk driving force coming from the melt. I should point out that you can see from this picture that if there's a net growth into the melt, there's essentially an intrinsic Iconal effect, which comes from propagation of fronts. So the resulting equation we'll have will be a surface relaxation, much in the spirit of what Bob had described, with the addition of an Iconal effect. The difference between those two models, we'll see, is that one is an equilibrium phase separation, in the sense of a gradient descent of free energy, and the other is non-variational. And that non-variational term comes from the bulk interacting with the surface, and this Iconal term breaking the variational structure. And we'll see that indeed the two problems have distinct structure. Okay, I don't have time for this, but I want to just sort of claim that the equation that I write down is not phenomenological, it's physically motivated, and I'll quickly skip through some details on that. So we'll have a surface energy which is anisotropic and has a corner rounding, kappa being the curvature, alpha being that corner length scale. The variational derivative of this quantity, which is the chemical potential, takes this form. If you like motion by mean curvature, you already have it there, but you also have this higher order surface diffusion effect. Looks like surface diffusion, but it's really going to be attachment kinetics driven. And in addition, you have the presence of a bulk driving force. This will lead to the Iconal effect if the solid and liquid chemical potentials don't coincide. If this is zero, then the problem's variational. The resulting equation is simply, this is just one version, that the normal growth of the crystal's growing by solidification, is driven by the bulk chemical potential. At the moment one, but we'll talk about the 2D in a moment. I just wanted to give the simplest schematic description of this. So in the end, you arrive at the following equation. So here, we have a double well structure which tests slopes and is going to be selecting plus or minus 1 in this scaling. This is the corner rounding energy term, and in addition we have this Hamilton-Jacobi or Iconal effect which comes from the presence of net growth. Here epsilon is a dimensionless parameter which measures the competition between bulk and surface energy, and the limit that we're interested in is epsilon small. That can be small for two reasons. One, the corner length scale is small, and the other is that the bulk driving force can be small. So if you wanted to get a justification of the physics to this equation, you can look at that reference. I'd be willing to, you can look, I can give you details of how to get it. And again, that's just an repeating that the free energy is double well, and I might mention that an interesting double well structure is the degenerate spinodal structure. This is relevant from crystal growth. In fact, the surface energy in the strongly anisotropic regime generically has such a cusp singularity. And there's some interesting mathematical simplifications which occur from special choices, but all of this methodology is for a general double well structure. Okay, let me put this equation in a form that you may be more familiar with, which is the slope form. So if you take or set Q to be the x derivative of h, that is the slope, and take the x derivative of this equation, then you see that qt equals the Cahn-Hilliard operator with a Burgers convection term if there happens to be net growth. And the Burgers convection term, again, is this effect that as the hills are growing into the melt, this face grows to the right and this face grows to the left. Now, jumping to 2D, the 2D analog is to replace x derivatives by gradients. So again, the same structure, the bi-Laplacian. W is this effective free energy, and the Iconal term. This has been studied by two people before, Golovin and Davis in 1999, who took an Iconal term and fourfold symmetry, so that the preferred, energetically preferred gradients sit on these four wells. And then also Krug and company looked at a radially symmetric, this would be the Aviles-Giga choice, with a desorption term of this form. these are equivalent with respect to overall behavior. The interesting detail here is, first of all, morphological. So here's a simulation result taken from Golovin and Davis. And what it exhibits are these faceted structures, which you saw in those experimental pictures. But what I want you to know is there's a broken up-down symmetry here. Remember, there are four preferred planes, but all you see are pyramids. Their opponent, antipyramids, are not present in this picture. So this morphology exhibits this broken up-down symmetry of the equation. One question we'll examine is, what happened to the antipyramids? Second question, how does this structure evolve? That would be the coarsening dynamics of the structure. So we'll look at both issues. An interesting representation to take of this problem is to look at the edge network. So what I want you to imagine is you have this faceted structure and you project it down onto the underlying plane. Here's an early time representation of that edge network. So what you're looking at is the locations of ridges and pyramid edges, or valleys and anti-pyramid edges. And this is a later time picture. What you see is the characteristic length scale has grown. And what you see here is pyramid, 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 here, meeting in valleys. From the standpoint of a phase ordering, this exhibits interesting structure for the following reason. The order parameter here is a gradient. And being a gradient, that restricts the orientation of the phase boundaries. So if you think of motion by mean curvature, motion by mean curvature separates phases alpha and beta, plus or minus 1, but the shape of the free boundary is arbitrary in terms of its local normal. Here, the phase boundaries are rigidly constrained by this rank 1 constraint that the order parameter is a gradient. Geometrically, that's simple. When planes meet, they meet on a straight line. Since there are four preferred planes, there are only two distinct orientations which can occur, Cartesian or diagonal. So these phase boundaries move as rigid objects, and one of the challenges of characterizing the dynamics is the fact that the evolution has to be non-local. Unlike motion by mean curvature, the phase boundary is driven by its own local shape. Here, each edge must move as a unit to preserve that constraint. So whatever the dynamics are, it's non-local. Now, the other feature of this problem that we'll look at is the rate at which the characteristic scale grows, and the numerically observed rate from Golovin and Davis, and also from Krug and company, is t to the 1/2. That should be contrasted and compared with the non-growth regime, which is this gradient descent flow, where the iconal term is not there, and this relates to Bob's work as well, where it's shown numerically that there's a T 1/3 law. Well, actually, this is a detailed and an intricate question. The coarsening law here depends on the symmetry group. So here's a schematic picture taken from Siegert of early stage. You can't see the details here, I just claim it to be true. Pyramids and anti-pyramids are both present. There is no broken up-down symmetry. This is the fourfold case that's exhibited, but what Siegert noted is that the coarsening rate for the coarsening law for, see here, for trigonal symmetry was T 1/3, which is the exponent that was expected in the radial case, but for square symmetry it was an unexpected T 1/4. This is an understandable detail, but in fact it reveals something interesting. The coarsening rate depends on the symmetry group, not just on the equation sort of qualitatively as a whole. And I really don't need this transparency, but this is just to emphasize that without the iconal term, the phase ordering is thermodynamically driven. That is to say, this is an unnecessary parenthesis, and that equal sign should be out here. The variational derivative of this of Vila's Biga's energy is exactly this quantity here, and this previous equation is this gradient descent. This is thermodynamic in the sense, phase ordering, in the sense that there's an effective free energy which is characterizing the flow. It's variational in structure. So those terms, thermodynamic phase ordering and variational in structure, are synonyms. What we're interested in is non-variational phase ordering, where, or in the physicist language, driven phase ordering, where thermodynamics alone doesn't suffice to characterize the dynamics. So this model problem, where you introduce a convective effect, for example, illustrates the distinction between thermodynamic phase ordering and driven phase ordering. Okay, so the convective Cahn-Hilledon 1D is an illustrative example where you see that the characteristic length scale grows like T1/2 when you have convection present, but is logarithmically slow without. Another feature is the morphology. Binary coalescence of phase boundaries is generic for thermodynamic phase ordering in this case, but indeed here, binary is impossible, and the only coarsening event which can occur is a triple event. Let me illustrate that with a simulation. Here's a simulation of the convective Cahn-Hilliard. This is space, it's a periodic domain, this is time. This connects here, and this is the late time. Focus on, for example, this event. Here you have regions of slope +1 and -1 separated by the phase boundaries, and what you see are triple events. Three boundaries coalesce into one. What's actually happening here is that you have two valleys eating up a hill, leaving or ejecting a valley. So instead of an annihilation, you have two valleys consuming a hill, ejecting a valley. And this 3-to-1 morphology is the generic structure for the convective Cahn-Hilliard. And there's a Cahn-Hilliard coarsening event, two phase boundaries come together, annihilating, one section being removed. I see that I'm actually running out of time, so let me quickly say that the dynamics are characterizable by matched asymptotics for the convective Cahn-Hilliard, and the basic idea hinges on this non-thermodynamic feature. There are exact heteroclinic solutions to the Cahn-Hilliard problem which connect the two states plus or minus one. Well, not quite. The exact solutions exhibit an order epsilon offset from those thermodynamic equilibrium values. And what you see is the step up, which is a valley, is slightly steeper in the far field than you expect. Whereas the hill, which is the step down, is slightly shallower than you expect. So the role of this iconal effect is to take the thermodynamic structures, lift the valley, and compress the hill, so to speak. Now these two structures, when placed together, have a mismatch in their slopes, and that mismatch drives the coarsening. That mismatch can be characterized by a matched asymptotics, and you end up with a dynamical system. That's the schematic picture of the matching. Let's just jump over that. Here's the matched asymptotics. The underlying structure of this problem in 1D is conservative. It's a conservation law of the order parameter Q with a flux. So indeed, these shock structures, which are the hill corners and the valley corners, are driven by the Rankine-Hugoniot relation. And putting all pieces together, identifying the flux from matched asymptotics, you arrive at a coarsening dynamical system. I should go back a step. That was the reason for mentioning this. Notice that in the Rankine-Hugoniot relation, for the kinks, which are the valleys, and the anti-kinks, which are the hills, the jump in the order parameter here is 2, whereas here it's -2. So indeed, when you look at this system of ODEs, it has an intrinsic skew symmetry. And that skew symmetry reflects the broken up-down symmetry. Hills are distinguished from valleys. So when you look at the dynamics, you see that it's a nearest neighbor dynamical system where a hill looks to the left and then the right, but the valley does the opposite. The interaction law is if two of them bump into one another, they annihilate. It automatically follows from this ODE that's been identified that the scaling law is T1/2. That's because simply the flux scales like 1 over the length because it's diffusion dominated in small length scale regime, and therefore the ODE structure has this invariance, and that invariance guarantees T1/2. I'm sorry for going so fast, but I've got some other stuff I really want to get to. The other two theorems are that from the ODE, binary is impossible, ternary is, there's one and only, there's a unique ternary event. Two hills can meet a valley, sorry, two valleys can meet a hill, but two hills cannot meet a valley. Here's a detail that compares the PDE with the sharp interface theory. So the color-coded structure below is the PDE, and the ODE is superimposed on top, and you see that the match is perfect up to the point where the phase boundaries overlap. remember the matched asymptotic theory is in the limit as the phase boundary width goes to zero, which of course is not true for the PDE, which is a finite epsilon. That finite epsilon effect takes effect here. And there's a larger scale structure of hill valleys where you look at the evolution of the phase boundaries. I should quickly make a comment. The first talk yesterday, which was studying the stability of wave trains, arrives at a condition for the evolution of the phase and talks about stability conditions. If that stability condition is negative, that leads to coarsening, and that's then an unstable structure. So that's sort of an interesting sort of, I think, question to examine, characterizing instabilities by these phase order methods for such problems. But of course, then you eventually go into nonlinear regime, and you have to look at the dynamics of the phase boundaries in the nonlinear regime. Okay, there's a crossover effect here, which I guess is interesting, but in the interest of time and other stuff, I'll just get over. This is characterizable by the Sharpe interface theory, that for length scales greater than the Peckley length scale, which is a natural balance of convection and diffusion in this system, there's a crossover to logarithmically slow, and that's characterizable too. Now to 2D. So what I want to try and show you in the last 5 minutes, in the last 5 minutes, is the theory as it relates to 2D. I don't have time to describe how I get here, but would argue that arguments similar in spirit to what I've shown before allow you to characterize the coarsening dynamics of 2D problems. So, for example, here's a morphology of a hill, valley, and a pyramid, anti-pyramid structure, and I'm going to discuss, or show you rather, some simulations, both of the PDE and of the Sharpe interface theory, to illustrate what's going on there. So there's the edge network representation of that structure, and the color scheme here is bright edges correspond to, you're shining a light from above on this structure, the bright edges are the concave down, and the dark edges are the concave up. What we'll see when we look at the simulations, we'll take a simulation of this structure, is that the simulations will be both of the PDE and of the Sharpe interface theory as it relates to this edge network. The Sharpe interface theory says, give me the location of the edges, I tell you what happens next. What you'll see in the Sharpe interface theory is that anti-pyramids are unstable and they unzip. And that's why they go away. One of the things you have to go through in this whole exercise is a lot of combinatorics and counting. You have to identify all the junction types, etc., etc. There are 8 triple junctions. Let's see, 1 to 5 distinct order 4 and 2 distinct order 6 and so on and so forth. And then you have to also understand their bifurcations and how they interact. That's part of the challenge in doing this. So let me now jump to the fun part, which would be the simulations too. So theory to the side and pictures instead. So let me first of all show you a movie of the coarsening dynamics as it takes place for the PDE. So these simulations are courtesy of my graduate student. If I can get that to LS. Yeah, so this is courtesy of my graduate student, Scott Norris. And what you see here is pyramids moving and interacting, and you see the edge network in action. This is a periodic domain. I don't know if the colors are... Could you maybe kill the light there? That might help. You see the structure eventually finish in a pyramid-anti-pyramid structure. That's the limit. The coarsening would continue indefinitely if the domain was unbounded, but the finite size effects kick in and select this anti-pyramid pyramid. Here's a set of snapshots which help you see better what's going on. So here's pyramid, pyramid, smaller pyramid. Here's the edge network representation, pyramid, pyramid, valleys. And we'll just skip through and watch the motion of this edge network. So you see that's the first step, where this structure here, which is a small pyramid, is being extinguished by the two larger pyramids. Again, this is the PDE simulation, not the Sharpe interface theory yet. That's now gone. And now at this point, there are two pyramids on this periodic domain, one here, and they jostle with one another to see which wins. Two pyramids is equivalent to a periodic tiling of the plane with pyramids. So the thing to envision is I've got one fixed pyramid and then I tile the plane with it. That leads to order 8 junctions, and what you see here are essentially perturbed order 8 junctions. And what happens is those then close in, one pyramid wins. Right here is a tiny pyramid which is being sucked up and is about to disappear. And in the end, you're stuck by the periodic boundary conditions in a pyramid-anti-pyramid structure. There is only one pyramid here and one corresponding anti-pyramid there. And then the last thing to show would be the simulations of the edge network dynamical system theory, which I don't have time to describe, so I just show you the pictures instead. So here we have a periodic domain, pyramid, 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 pyramid. So we have 4 pyramids, but also 4 anti-pyramids. Anti-pyramid here, here, here. We all perturb this system. There's the perturbation. So you've now broken up the order 4 structure. So this pyramid has now got a small rooftop. This saddle has bifurcated. This pyramid here has a small trough-like structure. And now we'll just evolve the sharp interface theory. And we'll stop at this point. So you see what's happened. This structure here, which was formerly the anti-pyramid, has unzipped. This is a provable analytical fact. The anti-pyramids are dynamically unstable in the sharp edge limit. They simply, if perturbed, unzip. Contrary, pyramids are stable. If perturbed, they return to their original structure. When coupled together in the plane, the pyramids are themselves constantly being perturbed or jostled by what's happening around them, but they maintain their structure until they're annihilated. So now the topological event I want to show you, this is a big challenge, so again, these simulations were put together with my graduate student Scott Norris, Northwestern. There's a big challenge now in moving this network around because, for example, in a moment, this face is about to join to this face. So if you're familiar with grain growth, there are a number of topological events which occur there. The number of topological events which occur in faceted growth is much richer. That's the 2D problem. 2D polycrystal problem is, this is richer than the 2D polycrystal. Of course, 3D polycrystal is essentially this. Okay, so let's watch this face join event. Let me zoom that up so we can see it. So there, it happened. So now this face has joined to this one. Let's continue the triple junction piercing a line. And now we have a structure here. This small rooftop is about to be annihilated between these two faces. Gone. Next up, this is not real time, this is just time steps, just sort of focusing on what the events are. Next step, this pyramid is about to be wiped out by this one and this one. So we'll quickly go through that. So that one goes. You begin to, once, these are fascinating to watch, but in the end, the structures which come out are generic. These are characterizable events which are happening. So now I guess I can say here, this is like the picture I showed before for the PVE. We've got two pyramids jostling with one another, and they meet. This is the order 8 structure which has been perturbed. When you perturb an order 8 structure, it leads to a sequence of 6 triple junctions. Actually, there are two possibilities, 6 triples, or 3 triples and a disconnected triple. So then they jostle, one of them wins, and now this one is winning, this one is being extinguished. Gone. Okay, so I guess I can simply say time is now up, that future directions would be to take this framework and apply it in the context of elasticity driven, replacing the bulk driving force with an elastic driving force. That's relevant for the quantum dot problem. Other questions relate to fixed length scale structures. So I put this up as an advert for the next talk, which looks at the Cahn-Hilliard, but with a term here, which in some way can be viewed as a baby elasticity term, not sort of the localized version of that non-local problem, in which case fixed length scale structures emerge. And there's a set of references. So thank you for your attention.